This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. Vermont's largest city, Burlington, faces public safety issues that might sound familiar to communities all across our region. Today, we'll talk with Burlington Police Chief John Murad about staffing, community oversight of his department, and how they're addressing the ongoing drug crisis. But first, Vermont's state primary elections are tomorrow. So let's start the show with two Vermont political reporters here to talk us through some of the big ticket races and down ballot ones as well. Sarah Meerhoff is VT Digger's State House Bureau Chief. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me, Michaela.
Yeah, thanks for making time. We're also joined by Calvin Cutler, the politics reporter for WCAX. Welcome back to the program, Calvin.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so let's start at the top of the ticket. There are two Democrats running for the gubernatorial nomination, Esther Charleston of Middlebury, Peter Duvall of Underhill. Vermont Public hosted a debate, which some of our listeners might have heard or seen just a few weeks ago. You can find it on vermontpublic.org. Calvin, what has been interesting about this primary race to you?
I think in terms of what's been interesting this time around is compared to the last primary we had back in 2022, there was a ton of turnover up and down the ballot. We had multiple statewide races, which were open contested primaries. We had a congressional primary as well. There was quite a bit happening 2 years ago. In comparison to that, it is a little bit more quiet. There are, as you mentioned, contested primaries on both the Republican and the Democratic side for lieutenant governor. You know, there certainly are. There's a number of contested Senate and House seats as well, which could potentially have some pretty big stakes. I think that's one of the biggest, though, takeaways for me is just it's a little bit of a sleepier time this time around, but certainly really important. Lots of issues about, property taxes, education funding, housing, some of these issues that are normally kind of saved for the general election, we are seeing them bubble up in some of these primaries, especially in the down ballot primaries too. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about some more of those down ballot primaries in just a moment. But to return to the top of the ticket, I mean, as you mentioned, this is a bit of a sleepier race here. There are two Democrats who are competing for that Democratic nomination, but they'll be running in November against Governor Phil Scott, who is, I believe, the most popular governor in the country, according to recent polling. He received 69% of the vote in the 2022 general election. And then there's the lieutenant governor's race, which is shaping up to be a pretty interesting one. There's John Rogers and Gregory Thayer running on the Republican side, Thomas Renner running against incumbent Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman on the Democratic side. We also have a debate with all of these candidates, two debates, on vermontpublic.org. And Sarah Meerhoff, you had a pretty big story out last week involving our Lieutenant Governor. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure thing. So the story dates back to, or the events of the story date back to the start of the biennium in January of 2023. Essentially, what happened was Lieutenant Governor Dave Zuckerman was back in his first floor office in the State House for the first time in 2 years. Remember, he had that 2 year hiatus from the office when former Lieutenant Governor Molly Gray was in there. And so upon his return to the office, one of the things that he was doing was trying to get to know the legislators that he, hadn't worked with over those past 2 years. Some of that included one-on-one meetings with legislators where he offered them, here's my office, a private space if you need it. There's coffee, there's tea. Among those offerings that he made to new and older legislators alike were an offering of menstrual products. And people had some different reactions to this as I was talking to them. I talked to a lot of people for this story. Some folks said, he had good intentions and he was just trying to be, an ally to women in the workplace. Other folks said that they felt really uncomfortable by being, approached unprompted, essentially, by the lieutenant governor and having been made an offer of these products. I think one of the standout quotes from the story that I worked on was from Representative Heather Chase, who eventually launched a complaint against the lieutenant governor. She said that it wasn't his lane, that it wasn't really his place to be offering these products. So I could probably go on about this for the entirety of this show, so I won't. I will end it at eventually an ethics complaint was filed. Essentially, there wasn't anything that the legislature could actually do in terms of having jurisdiction over a member of the executive branch. And so there were some internal deliberations and reprimands specifically from House Speaker Joe Krawinski against Lieutenant Governor Dave Zuckerman. And those interactions just came to light. And that's why I reported on them last week.
Well, Sarah, here's my question for you about this story. So there's a number of longtime Democratic leaders, including former State Representative Kitty Toll, former State Treasurer Beth Pierce, who have endorsed David Zuckerman's Democratic opponent, Thomas Renner, in this lieutenant governor's race. And I'm curious what you think this, combined with the news of this warning from Speaker Krawinski coming out, I'm not sure how you got wind of these warnings that he received, but what do you think all of this says about how David Zuckerman gets along with, works with Democratic leadership at the State House? And how might that affect this race?
Oh, that's a great question, Michaela. I would say that there is clearly, and I don't think it's controversial for me to say at all, there is a rift between progressives and Democrats. Remember, Dave Zuckerman, he is running in the Democratic primary for the Dem nomination for lieutenant governor, but at his core, he's a progressive, a capital P progressive. Mm-hmm. And there has always been a longer than me and Calvin have been reporting in Vermont, maybe even longer than we've been alive. I don't know how old you are, Calvin. But there has always
been. You don't have to answer that, Calvin.
There's been this rift for a long time. And I think that part of the way that that can arise are things like you were pointing to, longtime stalwarts of the Democratic Party endorsing before a primary a sitting lieutenant governor's primary opponent. I mean, that's pretty unique. Oftentimes in a contested party primary, folks, incumbents in office or, longtime politicians will kind of sit it out until there's a nominee out of kind of respect for the primary process and, just a willingness to ride for whoever earns the nomination, right? And so I think it's really interesting that some of these folks have come out so early endorsing an opponent of an incumbent. That being said, like in terms of the story that I worked on last week about this internal complaint, I would not say that that was so much of this Dems versus Progs rift. And I say that because Representative Heather Chase, she is not involved at all in these campaigns as far as I asked her a lot about that. I pulled up her financial disclosures and her, donor history. There was none in terms of, donating to lieutenant gubernatorial candidates. So she was really clear with me that the reason why she came forward was not out of some like campaign ploy. It was that, in her words, she wanted voters to know about this behavior before the primary. But it's not like she did it on behalf of any Oppo campaign.
Mm. Well, thanks for that insight, Sarah. I want to go to the phones. We have a call from Robert in Burlington, who's been waiting on the line. Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. So I have a very serious concern about abuse of the open primary process by the Vermont Progressive Party, and specifically in the lieutenant governor's race, Zariah Hightower, a well-known progressive in the city of Burlington. She is running for lieutenant governor in the progressive primary, and she's not running sincerely. She's running as a placeholder so that when she wins, so that David can run only in the Democratic primary, then the progressives know which ballot that they want to vote in, and they'll cross over and vote in the Democratic primary.
Right, right.
Then David wins that, and then Zariah wins the progressive
primary. Robert, I'm going to jump in here because I think I'm getting your point here. I'm getting your concern. And you're also nodding to the fact that Vermont has open primaries where any candidate can get on the ballot regardless of party affiliation. Robert here has specific concerns about how progressive candidates might be using the system to their advantage, as Robert sees it. Calvin, I'm wondering if you might be able to speak a little bit more to how these open primaries work and maybe address Robert's concern for him.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a really good question. And it's something that, you know, we're seeing it in this race, but it's been done, you know, certainly in progressive primaries before, even in the Republican side of things as well. It's really an electoral strategy that, you know, people can use in the state of Vermont because we don't have party, registration, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, no matter what party you are, as long as, let's just say you're running for a House seat, you can get on that ballot with, I believe it's 50 signatures for a state house seat, for instance. But certainly it does bring up the question too about, you know, candidates, what do they stand for? What is the most transparent way to present yourself to voters? You know, here in Vermont, we have what's known as fusion candidates as well, where, you know, you can be on the ballot for more than one party as well. As Sarah pointed out earlier, a progressive Democrat or a Democratic progressive or a DRP. You know, we've had all three parties for some candidates. So, I mean, it certainly does, you know, it does raise some frustrations for some that, you know, I've heard from, but it's a really interesting sort of facet of Vermont politics. But I think it's also worth pointing out too that, you know, primaries are happening in the summer. You know, this is a presidential election year, and there is a lot of attention, of course, being paid at the national level. But generally, people aren't paying as much attention to local politics during the summer. People are on vacation. Kids are getting to, you know, ready to go back to school. And so primaries tend to bring out people who are really the most engaged in politics, people that are, you know, party faithful. And so that's another dynamic, I think, that we're going to be seeing this week with the primary.
Mm. Sarah, I'd love for you to weigh in here, too, because you've written about this a bit for VT Digger recently. I mean, this year, John Rogers is running for lieutenant governor on the Republican ticket, even though he served as a Democrat during his many years in the legislature. In the primary gubernatorial race, Peter Duvall is running as a Democrat, but he ran 2 years ago as a Republican. Sarah, what interests you about the ways in which some candidates have seemed to shift parties for this race in particular?
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic because, you know, as Calvin said, there's no party registration in Vermont, and there's essentially no kind of vetting process or litmus test for candidates to be able to essentially put whatever party name next to their name that they wish, which on the one hand, you know, there's a lot to be said for having a very open democratic process where, you know, almost anybody can run for office. And that's something to be celebrated, I think a lot of people would say. But then on the other hand, I mean, some folks have told me that they're concerned about the prospect of that being abused, essentially. You know, you pointed to Peter Duvall in the Democratic primary for governor. He ran as a Republican not long ago, and he told me straight up in an interview that he doesn't really identify either way. I think the way that he put it was he's not part of a machinery. He just decided to run as a Democrat this year because he thought it was what he had a better shot at, because he knows that beating, you know, incumbent Governor Phil Scott is very, very, very difficult. So that I think voters can, you know, rightfully question, like, do I want to dedicate my primary vote to somebody who openly says they don't believe in the principles of the party or, you know, the platform that the party stands for? I don't know. That's up to voters to decide. Or maybe they think that that's an intriguing position and that's something that they want to back. This is a phenomenon that also happens down the ballot as well. I talked to some legislative candidates who had the same conclusion, that they, for whatever reason, you know, thought that voters would be more open maybe to voting for a Democrat or would just be more receptive to them. One candidate told me that You know, when he was door knocking, trying to get signatures as a Republican, people just didn't give him the time of day. That was kind of dependent on the leanings of his district, he was telling me. So it's really interesting. And I don't know, you know, I don't foresee, frankly, any kind of reforms to this in the imminent future, because I think Vermont is very proud of how open its electoral process is. But it's something that I think is really fair for voters to be very, you know, scrutinizing when they're looking at the candidates on their ballots. Know that just because there's a D or an R next to their name might not necessarily mean that that person stands for that platform.
Right. Well, you mentioned the down ballot races, and I want to make sure that we have some time to get to those. Calvin, could you tell us a bit more about the races that you've been following closely, the down ballot races?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think this is where really the rubber is going to hit the road in many regards, because, you know, especially in the Senate, there's six open seats. So there's more turnover in the Senate. You know, certainly we've had a lot in recent years. And, you know, there's contested primaries in some of these races. As we've talked about in recent years, there has been a considerable amount of political tension or policy differences between Governor Phil Scott, who continues to win by larger and larger margins each year, and the Democratic supermajority at the State House, who was just handed their largest vote count in state history. They control 104 seats in the House and 22 in the Senate. And that isn't counting progressive seats as well. And so when you talk about the balance of power and, you know, potentially what policies they may be able to advance, or whether they'll, especially in the Senate, be able to count to that two-thirds majority needed to override a veto from Governor Phil Scott. The last session that ended, they had overridden six vetoes from Phil Scott, and one of them they failed to do so on the data privacy bill. But that said, you know, what we're kind of keeping an eye on is how many candidates, whether it be a Republican candidate that's able to, you know, win their primary, you know, get on the ballot, or if it's a maybe more moderate or centrist Democrat, somebody who might not just align with, you know, Phil Scott, but might align with somebody like a John Rogers or Bobby Starr or Jane Kitchell, you know, Democrats who had, you know, previously served for many years, but have, you know, more of a more conservative view on issues of taxation and spending. So that's what I'll be looking for is, you know, we won't exactly know what the results will be until the November election. But again, this is the semifinal, if you will, that will determine who will be on the November ballot. So we'll be looking at like what types of choices that Vermonters have in November.
The semifinals. Have you been watching some Olympics, Calvin?
I have, actually. Maybe not.
It's trickling down to our political speak. Let's take one more call here. We have Alan in Burlington on the line. Alan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. From Burlington.
Yes, go ahead. What's your question or comment?
My question was, or it's a comment, is that could you clarify, if I hadn't read your guest's article, I think you paint a kind of obscure picture when you say that David Zuckerman was handing out or offering menstrual products to guests of his new office or his return to his office. It just, it's so obscure. I mean, I don't know what the context is.
Alan, thank you for calling in. I do encourage you and anyone listening to read Sarah Mierhoff's article on VT Digger for additional context there. Sarah, we don't have too much time here, but do you mind recapping just briefly the beginning of the story for Alan and other listeners who might just be joining us?
Sure. So essentially what was happening was that in the lieutenant governor's chief of staff's office, which is directly adjacent to his own, you typically walk through it in order to get into the lieutenant governor's office. There was a drawer of various menstrual products you know, in different ways that people might want to use them, basically open for folks who needed them or wanted them. And the lieutenant governor was either in these one-on-one meetings or approaching people. I talked to one legislator who was in the cafeteria, and the lieutenant governor came up to her and said, if you ever need, there is this drawer of products in my chief of staff's office, which happens to be directly across the hallway from the women's restroom on the first floor of the State House. So I hope that clears that up, Alan, as to what you're wondering.
Thanks, Sarah. And then very briefly from each of you, I'm wondering if you could call out one specific down ballot legislative race that you're really interested in seeing the results of tomorrow. Kevin, we'll start with you.
I think a lot of eyes are on the Chittenden Central race in Chittenden County. That's the one where you have three incumbents, Senators Martine Gulick, Tanya Vihovsky, and Senator Phil Baruth are running as a ticket, and they have a primary challenger, a longtime TV anchor and reporter Stuart Ledbetter is looking to challenge them, stepping up. So we'll see. I think that's going to be an interesting one. As I was talking about the sort of balance and what are the issues that candidates are running on, Stuart is looking at housing as his main priority. You know, I think it's going to be an interesting bellwether, so to speak, of where primary voters are putting some of their priorities.
Mm. Thanks, Calvin. And Sarah?
Similarly, I would say that down south, State Representative Emily Kornheiser has a primary challenger, Emily Kornheiser of Brattleboro. And that race, I think, is really a kind of distillation of this statewide debate over property taxes. And Representative Kornheiser is chair of House Ways and Means, and really that was kind of the epicenter of some of the hottest property tax debates this legislative session. And so that's really bubbling up in this primary race. But overall, I would say the most interesting thing I'm noticing this election cycle is that Governor Phil Scott, seeing his election results over the past number of years and how strong his base is in Vermont, his rhetoric and his campaign's efforts, I see as him racing against the legislature. I think his policies, their fate really depends on the leanings of this legislature and whether they can take any crack at the supermajority this year.
Well, it's going to be an interesting series of races. Join us again on Wednesday on Vermont Edition as we debrief the results of the primaries. Sarah Meerhoff is VT Digger's State House Bureau Chief. Sarah, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And Calvin Cutler is the politics reporter for WCAX. Calvin, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Vermont state primaries will be held tomorrow, Tuesday. Polls close at 7 p.m. Any registered voter may participate in any party's primary tomorrow. Vermont does not register voters by party. Happy voting.